Morning, everybody. Yes. Today is Tuesday, the 7th of February. And you're up. You're moving.
I am.
So what, you're about 3 weeks into this thing called taxes?
Yeah, it's going. I start in the morning and get to work before 5 and try to get lots done.
Yeah, and then you have to show up here. All right. Mr. McCauley is alongside this morning. Are you ready for our, why do we say that?
I am.
Why do we?
Is that dripping with enthusiasm?
Oh, yeah.
I am, Brian. I am so ready.
Why do we say lowbrow?
I would guess maybe the furrowed look it causes on one's face when you observe something that maybe engage that way.
Okay. People who poke fun at someone by calling them him or her a lowbrow usually think of themselves as highbrows. But they may not be aware that these labels perpetuate findings of a one-time science that has been completely discredited. Seeking explanation for variations in intelligence, a group of 19th century experimenters, notice how I lost my voice there, developed what they called phrenology, or the study of bumps and shapes of the skull. Phrenologists swore that they could find out a lot from a map of a person's head, with brows thought to be especially revealing. A person with high brows was judged to be especially intelligent, capable of doing almost everything. But anyone whose brows were low on the forehead was a hopeless slob, doomed to ignorance by birth. Phrenology went by the boards a long time ago, but left its tracks behind. We now know that the height of a person's brow is meaningless, except as a detail of appearance. Yet speech retains lowbrow to label anyone thought of lacking refinement and incapable of acquiring it.
So I don't know, the fact that I have more forehead than some people, does that make my brows appear higher or lower?
That would be much brow. Or for those of us without hair, no brow. I mean, we could go on way too long on this one.
Yeah, brow free.
Almost sounds like barfly.
I almost did that the other day with a barbecue.
Oh, really?
It almost became brow free.
A little too much gas on the old...
Poof.
Yeah.
I had a couple of smelly... I could definitely smell I burned a couple of hairs. Right.
Well, you know, you don't have to have your face that close to make it happen. Or it was really impressive flame. You take your pick either way.
Yeah, it was almost Bill Flambe. No, it wasn't that tasty. I'm making more of a story than really is worth.
That's all right. Yeah. That's all right. So with everything that's going on, I know the State of the Union tonight, there's going to be a little bit of discussion about how the economy is going and how some of the changes are going to be made for and about inflation. But are you seeing signs and tracks of inflation in the early returns that you're processing at this point?
Well, yeah, I think it's everywhere. I mean, I think the mitigation to inflation running rampant is that energy costs have moderated a bit. I mean,
except for gas.
They're still
up. Not gasoline, PG&E gas.
Yes. But
That went up, 30%, 40%?
Yeah, it went up a staggering amount.
Yeah.
It's okay because the politicians in California and PG&E agree probably everybody deserves a $50 rebate. So everybody should feel good.
Not weekly.
And, I don't mean to be...
One time.
Yeah, I don't mean to be sarcastic, but...
Tough not to be sometimes.
That is not solving the problem. That is just trying to pat yourself on the back and do something. Anyway,
And there's a lot of that going on these days.
Yeah, it's like, oh, look what we did. We got you $50 back when people, you know, I walked through the bank the other day and people were complaining about their $500 energy bills that they were having. Just as I, you know, heard several people, you know, kind of just in the back and forth. And, you know, so I just don't see how a $50 credit is really going to help people who had a $500 energy bill who are used to maybe a $300 energy bill or $320 energy bill or whatever.
Yeah.
In December. So,
but there's no relief on that or any areas. I mean, I guess my reference is back when sales tax, you used to write off sales tax.
Mm-hmm.
That was many moons ago.
Yeah. You still can, but the circumstances are limited.
Okay, so I'm on the outside looking in on that one. Yeah. There are certain things that government can do if they really are serious about it. And I would ask, how long is the latency before that kicks in? I mean, if the governor said, okay, as of today, everybody gets a tax write-off at the state of 25% of your energy costs.
Mm-hmm. They're not going to do that because,
well, I know that's,
because the budget's a mess.
Oh, well. Maybe I'll float that one up and see if Mr. McGuire would like it. He can author it. It's 8:19.
Murphy's Markets has everything you need to get through your day the healthy way. From drinks to snacks and everything in between, right now, Amy and Brian coconut water is only $1.99. Brew Dr. Kombucha drinks are also just $1.99. And Annie's homegrown products are $2.49. A 6-ounce Yoplait yogurt is only 79 cents. And don't forget about chicken of the sea tuna, $4 for $5. Get a boost for your day by stopping by Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS News and Information. Time is 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Bill McCauley. So what is known? Are there still some question marks that are out there of things that haven't really settled in? Last time there were still some areas that needed to have refining occur.
Yeah, there's the most consequential thing that potentially impacts many people listening this morning is the California middle class tax refund.
That was the magic that showed up in the account
somewhere?
Yeah,
I mean, it might have been, there's a table in it, and the way California, beginning in October of 2020, right before the election, began sending out refunds to taxpayers. They called the program the California Middle Class Tax Refund Program. It goes to people who made up to $500,000. It's based on your 2020 tax return for California. So if you filed for California, it will look at your filing status for 2020. They used your filing status and whether or not you had dependents, and they determined the amount that you would get based upon the income. So you looked at, depending on your filing status, your income, and whether you had dependents, you got a varying amount. But it wasn't really based on just a percentage of the tax that was paid. It was just an amount. And the idea was trying to kick back money because
the state had it.
skyrocketing fuel costs, particularly gasoline, and the concurrent state increasing the state tax on that, which made the problem worse. You know, I mean, and I see that. You know, I go to Oregon and I buy gas there and I buy gas here. It's staggeringly different in terms of the cost per gallon. We Californians pay through the nose for gasoline. Now, maybe some people argue that's a good thing, so that maybe we all
go EV?
Yeah, or do something else. I mean, and I don't even want to get into that argument. But
hitchhike.
One way or the other, I just don't. I mean, I have my own thoughts, but it has nothing really
to do with it. It's a circular argument. Yeah.
So, but the point is that that's the basis for these payments. So these payments were commenced in October, as I mentioned, right before the election. Interesting.
Now, how would those show up?
Non-coincidental timing. Well, it depends.
Or be labeled so that you could identify that they were there.
It depends how you got it. First of all, if you had a active direct deposit account, like that you used for that you got refunds for your 2021 taxes, then they would use that bank account. If you don't, then they most often sent a debit card. The debit card came from Omaha, Nebraska, and I had a lot of clients call me going, what is this? Is this real? Because strangely enough, when California decided to do that, they used a company in Omaha to send those distributions. So they sent a cover letter. There would be a debit card in there. Some people got a direct deposit. You'd have to check your bank statement to look for it.
It would be labeled State of California?
Yeah, State of California. I'm not exactly sure, but it would be something that should be indicative.
Now, what would happen if somebody saw that as junk mail?
And then they threw it. They don't have it. Then they could potentially try to get one reissued. But what happens is they sent a debit card with a notice, and the notice did not include two important pieces of information, the date that the payment was being made, and I'll tell you why that's important in a moment. And then the second piece that didn't include is the amount of the payment. So we had this
standard, so they just had a generic letter.
Fairly generic letter, although there was some coding on it, but that did not include the amount, the date they were paying it, or the amount that was being paid. So if you get paid more than $600 or more, you get a 1099 miscellaneous. And this will be taxable for federal purposes, not for California. If you don't get a 1099, it's still taxable, but it's harder to know the amount, because if you didn't have a direct deposit and you can't go back to your bank statement, you don't have a 1099, and all you got was a debit card and you didn't make note of when you got it and how much it was, you may not know. Now, it's calculable, but we don't know if that number's necessarily right, but we can calculate what it should have been. Here's the problem. They continue to send those payments into January.
So they slop over the deadline.
Right. Yeah. So did you receive your payment? When did you receive your payment? So, you know, we run into situations, clients, A, don't know if they got it, B, don't know when they got it, and C, don't know what the amount was, and D, it was less than $600, so there is no 1099. So that also...
Now, the feds are still chasing it if it's below $600?
Well, that's the interesting question, because California issued these things, didn't really make much of an effort to figure out what the taxation would be for federal. They looked at their own rules and said, well, we assume it's going to be taxable. We're going to send 1099s if it's more than $600. Of course, what happens is politics. And so so now we're into February, and now people are outraged that people might have to pay federal tax on this payment. So, and I'll explain to you why it probably should be taxable. Not that I care. Look, I'd be happy if it's not taxable for everybody, but it should be taxable based upon my understanding of the law. But now they're going to the IRS and saying, hey, we need a ruling about this. And so maybe this week we're going to hear whether or not these payments are going to be taxable or not for federal purposes. Kind of, anyway.
Maybe this week.
Maybe. And so they may come in and say, no, they're not taxable, but I do think if you look at the letter of the law, they should be taxable.
How much is it? I mean, if it's $600.
It depends, Brian. It could be $1,050. It could be $250.
Wait a minute. For $600? You're going to pay $1,000 in taxes?
No, the amount of the payment could be.
Oh, okay. It really is $830.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with CPA Bill McCauley.
I just said ding, 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 ding to you, the point you made.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah. That wasn't an indication you want to fight.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. Good.
Ding, ding.
Yeah. Oh, that was something I've been watching, Johnny. Everybody knows this show doesn't go where it's supposed to, right?
Okay. Right. Yeah.
Johnny Carson lately.
So you're saying that there's someone out there who's upset we're not talking taxes right now and would rather not hear about Johnny Carson?
It's a cliffhanger, yeah. But when he would go to a break, you know, instead of waving goodbye, he would grab the air. That was just a little, which is kind of what you just did, sort of.
Sort of.
Sort of, yeah.
Sort of, only different.
Yeah.
And not.
And that got dangerously close to a name that we were talking about during the break, too.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Dangerously.
Yeah. So the state of California has got this rebate that may or may not have been received, that may or may not have been in the tax year which we're doing the returns for now.
May or may not be taxable for federal purposes.
And then may or may not be anything we have to track.
Right.
So
yeah,
what's the best approach to take?
Figure it out. If you're worried about, you know, if you want to get going, then just figure out what the amount. Like, we, you know, we, as an example, we have clients who brought their stuff in. We've got everything done. And we're waiting for clarity on that one item because it's going to make it's not going to make a huge difference, but it's going to make a little difference. And so,
can you overpay and not worry about it?
You could. And then and right now the IRS is saying don't amend any returns. We'll have to see what if and when if they come out. Look, because this payment is not based on an actual amount of tax, it's based on just a filing status. It's not a refund of necessarily of tax, even though they wanted to call it a middle-class tax refund because it sounds good. But that's not really a tax refund. It's really a social payment. It's really a, you know, it's really
a payment.
It's just a social benefit payment. And those would be taxable because you can exempt social benefit type payments when it goes to people who are all in a certain needs category. The problem is this goes up to people making up to $500,000. You know, and they're not getting very much, but they're getting something. They're getting less. The more, it's the higher your income is, the less you get.
It's an inverse
payment. It's somewhere between $1,050 and $250 or something like that. Anyway, and so, anyway, the long story short is it really should be taxable because it's not a tax refund, and where you could look back to the tax benefit rule and say, did I benefit from paying state income?
Against that standard, that doesn't hold water.
We'll see. We'll see what happens. But if you're working on it right now, I would just, you know, if you're giving your stuff to somebody to do, if you got a 1099,
put a sticky note.
If you got a 1099 because you got $600 or more, congratulations. Put it, you know, put that in the packet.
I suspect that that would be the trigger is if you got a 1099.
Yeah, but if your payment is under $600, they didn't send you a 1099, it's still taxable. Just because you don't have a 1099 doesn't make it not taxable. It just means that it was less than the threshold.
But if you did receive one, you know it's there somewhere.
Yeah, and that would also indicate that the Franchise Tax Board thinks they paid you in 2022, which would mean it would be a 2022 transaction. If you don't have one, it could be that you got paid in 2023 and you'll get one next year. We don't know. And so that, in all cases, because we kind of have an idea when certain groups we're going to have those mailed. You know, how much of our clients' time and therefore their money can we spend trying to chase this to ground? It's stupid. You know, the Franchise Tax Board blew it. They blew it. They should have ensured that when they send the statement out that the amount of the payment was on the notice that came with the debit cards and
why not shoot them all out within a 6-week window? If you're going to do it, ramp up to it.
I think
or do it in this year so that you've got.
First of all, they timed it. They put it off so that it could be right before the election when the payments were going out.
Yeah, well, Newsom kicked butt anyway, so okay,
that I understand,
was kind
but
of
it's
a waste.
Contrivance. And right. The problem is they could have started in August, but the governor didn't think he was going to get as much benefit by doing them in August, so he put it off to where it would be in October. And I understand what politics are. I understand what political people are like. But what that meant is it created another issue. Not that it affects the governor, but, you know, because he I'm guessing he maybe didn't get one.
Probably over that threshold point.
Probably over the $500,000. But yeah. Anyway, so it's just one of those things where we're navigating it as we go through, and it'll change. And it's fine. It's just it's just an irritation because the program was not – I mean, you know – The state of California blows a lot of stuff, right? We had somewhere between $21 and $33 billion of fraud in the unemployment system during COVID. Okay, bogus claims paid by the state. So then that fraud, due to mismanagement, which is chronic, that what happens is the feds pay these claims get paid, and then the state has to reimburse its share. And the state didn't reimburse its share, so that what that means is employers now get to pay more for their unemployment premiums on employees for the next 4, 5, 6 years until that gets repaid. Now, last year we ran a big budget surplus. Why they couldn't have taken whatever their governmental failure, why they couldn't have subsidized that with their surplus instead of putting it and spending it other places, and instead putting it on the backs of small business. I mean, look, let's be realistic. It's not going to break big business.
The big boys, no.
But it's another challenge for small business. And, do we care about small business? Well, everybody gives lip service to caring about small business. But, I'd argue you can look at in a lot of cases and see that certain groups don't really care about small business. They'd like to sound like they do, but...
Or they're so unfamiliar that the actions that they take, they don't understand the impact.
Well, how many people who are decision makers, whether they be at a local level or other or state level, how many of them really have successfully run a business? I think that percentage is kind of small. And then I think when you get people who are in the bureaucracies who are working for government, who are regulators and other things, how many of those people have successfully run businesses and really understand what the risks are on that side? Relatively small number. So I do think that you don't end up with as wide an appreciation for the challenges for running a business and for dealing with all the compliance things. There's new things coming. That there's new stuff now.
That's right. I got a new FCC form by the end of the month.
Yeah. Yay. Yeah, well, we could talk about unclaimed property after the break.
Right? Unclaimed property.
Unclaimed property.
All right, let's talk about that when we come back. It's 8:43.
Hearty and healthy foods are abundant at Murphy's Markets. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast is now $5.99 a pound. USDA Choice New York Strip Steak, $15.99 a pound. And USDA Grade A Boneless Skinless Chicken Thighs are only $3.99 a pound. Complement this with a Greek salad, now just $7.99 a pound, topped with Kraft salad dressing for only $3.75 for a 16-ounce bottle. Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:47. We're back talking shop this morning with CPA Mr. Bill McCauley. You said that you wanted to talk about unclaimed property.
Unclaimed property.
Now, I'm not thinking this is real estate. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking that this is some other type of property. Mm-hmm. But who's claiming and who isn't claiming?
So California has an unclaimed property law. And the unclaimed property law essentially says if you have something that's somebody else's and you can't get it to them, in other words,
somebody, I borrow a shovel
so
from you.
Let's say I sell widgets and somebody comes in and gives me a $500 deposit because they want a delivery of widgets, and they go out of business, they disappear, and we can't find them, right? So we're trying to return the $500, but we send a check and it's returned on undeliverable, we can't find them.
Full effort is made,
yeah,
and no resolution.
So under California, that becomes unclaimed property, and after a window of time, and it depends if it's a payroll check, it's 1 year, other things it's 2 years. Anyway, after a window of time, if you have, as an example, in my example, I now have a check I wrote that isn't clearing my bank statement because it's sitting there, it's outstanding. Then what you do is you remit that property. You file what's called a holder remit report with the Secretary of State's office, and you send that money and the information that you know about the person that you owed it to the Secretary of State, and then they put it ultimately on the website so people could go find their unclaimed property. So that requirement has existed for a number of years, and I do think there is some unclaimed property that exists out there. Most of the time, if we have an outstanding check or our clients have outstanding checks, we'll ask them, oh, yeah, I wrote that check, but I forgot to void that one. I replaced the check, they lost it, but I forgot to void it. Well, that's not unclaimed property because I already paid it. I fulfilled that liability, that responsibility. I returned my customer's money or I paid them for the service. But it would be the case if they just simply didn't cash the check. Some people will just clear the check off the bank statement and
thank you very much and not worry about it.
Yeah. And that isn't really the way it's supposed to happen. So now on partnership, LLC, single S-corp and corporation tax returns, there's a box you know, have you ever filed a holder remit report for unclaimed property? If so, you have to tell them when the date the last time you did it and the amount that you remitted. So that's one more thing, you know, from a compliance standpoint. When we're working on a tax return, we get to the end of the return and go, oh, yeah, we got to ask about unclaimed property and find out. And then which
and if
means,
you haven't.
So here's the thing. So I call you, Brian. This is not how the conversation goes. And keep in mind, we sell our time. Hey, Brian, have you filed a holder remit report lately?
Huh?
That's the answer, huh? And then we spend 10 minutes going over me explaining what the requirement is and
dealing with my expletives.
Yeah, dealing with your expletives, going, oh, no, we're good. Or, you know, but by the time that's done, maybe I've spent 10 more minutes, maybe I've spent 12 more minutes. So that's the way we function. That's 2/10 of an hour. That's
chunk.
Chargeable times. That's another thing. That's a hidden tax on a business. Every time they add these
well, and if we haven't,
requirements.
If I go, huh, and you tell me what it is, and go, okay, I got a couple of those. What do we do?
Yeah, then that's a good thing.
Then you jump into the puddle.
We can do that, or we can direct you where to go so that you can do that. Then there's information.
But then that's more than back onto the business,
right.
Not because we've done anything wrong, but because circumstances.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we send it to the state, and it just goes into a pool and gets frittered away there.
And in a couple of years, businesses are going to have to report change in stock ownership within, I think, 60 days. I'm not sure. It's not affected till 2024, I believe, maybe 2025.
A stock or a chunk of stock?
So it wouldn't be Apple isn't going to have to do this, but if you if you're XYZ radio company and you have five shareholders and one of them gets bought out, you would report that change in shareholders to the state of California contemporaneously.
Joy.
Yeah.
You know, you are just such a ray of sunshine. It's stunning.
Well, that's because, it's February.
It goes 5 o'clock
somewhere. Yeah.
See everybody tomorrow.